welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, so you know what that means. It's time for the highly anticipated, much appreciated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan, I just got off a flight. I just released my own scent. I did. People on the plane next to me didn't seem too happy about it. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Wow. That was a stinker. Literally. That was a mid-summer tour joke from Duff, who's out with Guns N' Roses this summer. And come rock with Fozzy as well. We've got our biggest headlining show ever coming up, Spotlight on London, Friday, August 25th at the O2 Forum, Kentish Town. See Fozzy on Friday night, then come over to AEW's All In Sunday, August 27th at Wembley Stadium. FozzyRock.com has tickets for the O2 Forum. It's going to be a great show, and we've got so many shows coming up in October and November in the United States. So once again, FozzyRock.com for all that information. And speaking of great shows, I've got AR Fox coming up. He's been killing it on AEW recently as part of the Mogul Embassy with Swerve Strickland. He recently helped Swerve hand a beatdown to Darby Allin and Nick Wayne on Dynamite. He and Swerve go way back. They were both part of Lucha Underground and had an unbelievable death match during their time there. We get into all of that. We talk about his wrestling school and the talent he's trained that have gone to wrestle in WWE and even AEW. Air has been wrestling himself for the last 15 years on the indies. We get into that and his time in both Japan and Mexico. He talks about his WWE tryout and what happened there. And we talk about his journey to AEW, what it meant to get signed, and his recent heel turn. It's a great conversation with one of the newest members of AEW's Mogul Embassy. AR Fox starts now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so making waves here over the last week or so, AR Fox. A change in attitude, shall we say. But I think most importantly is the fact that now you're pretty much featured pretty regularly here in AEW. And I think you've been really kind of becoming an integral part of the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I did the jump. I jumped ship because I knew I just had to take my game to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I knew just coming out and doing a little cool sequence over and over again, you know, was just gonna put a glass ceiling on me. So I had to break out and, you know, switch sides.
And you don't like sunglasses?
No, I do not. only on a plane.
On a plane?
Yeah, on a plane. If you would have handed them to me on a plane, it might have went a little differently.
So you can sleep better?
Yeah.
Well, seriously, dude, I mean, it's been a long road for you in the business, and I was actually saying, watching you last week, you remind me a lot of Eddie Kingston, in that a guy who had been around for years and had been everywhere, but never had a shot at the national level. And then when he finally did, he took control and became one of our biggest stars here in AEW, and his career really started to blossom, you know, at the age of, you know, almost 40 or whatever he may be. It's kind of similar to your story in the pro wrestling biz.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it gives me a lot of motivation and it's inspiring to me. So I'm trying to follow Eddie's steps and then some.
So how did you end up starting to work in AEW? Because I remember seeing you maybe, I don't know, a year ago or so. I mean, you can know probably better than I do, but we've been around for 4 years. It seems like you would have been here a little bit earlier with your lineage and your history.
Yeah, but when they finally came to Atlanta, I was working with Sean Dean. I had a hand in training him. Like, I didn't train him from the ground up, but I had a hand in helping him out. And once I found out that he, you know, was in charge of some extra work and stuff, I told him I'm down to travel wherever I have to go or whatever, and started with a dark in Atlanta. But I just didn't know. I didn't know how to get here or who to speak to or anything for a while. But then once I've seen Sean in person, because he came to my school to just bring me a picture of him to put up on the wall at the school. So we started talking, and then he told me about if I had any guys that would want to do extra work. And I'm like, me? I'm like, I'll do it. Like, I don't care. I'll go. So I traveled with them and followed them and was, you know, traveling myself. You know, did about five or six darks, And then I started asking around, like, hey, man, how many darks did you do before you got signed? And some people were saying more. Some people were saying less. So I was just like, huh, I wonder what I got to do. And then that was like the last time. And then I was watching Dynamite at home, and my first match got announced on TV. That was how I found out about it.
Who was your match against?
Death Triangle.
Wow. Was it you and with
Top Flight?
Top Flight.
Yeah.
So that's so funny how you found out by watching on TV.
Yeah.
That's how I found out when I was drafted to SmackDown back in the very first draft. They were keeping it kayfabe, and they didn't say anything. And Dr. Luther had to call me. Hey, man, you've been drafted to SmackDown. I was like, wish I would have known. Someone could have called me.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
So you were at a school in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That's kind of where you were based from originally? Yes. Or?
No, I'm originally from Connecticut.
Okay.
But I moved to Atlanta to start wrestling, to join a wrestling school. Because I was like, you know, I was a young kid, just like, screwing around a lot. So my mom was like, it was time for me to, like, you know, leave and try to, like, change my surroundings a little bit, you know. And I just kept looking up wrestling schools, and we found this really cheap one in Atlanta ran by Mr. Hughes.
Wow. Mr. Yeah. Hughes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And she drove me down there, and yeah, that was pretty much it. I lived in a hotel for a couple of years right down the road from it.
How was it training with Mr. Hughes? What was his teaching style?
Very old school. Very old school. But it gave me my backbone. It gave me my foundation. Mm-hmm. Yep, very, very, very old school. Like, for instance, like if you duck something, not necessarily always on a duck. I'm just trying to explain it easy for, like, listeners. But, like, if you go under and up and over, like when they go in a corner, it was mandatory for you to point to your head when you went under and up and over. So that
like you were smart.
Yes.
Ah.
If you didn't do it, like the whole drill got stopped and started over. If you didn't point to your head when you went under and up and over.
Interesting.
So that you know, it was very old school. A lot of headlock takeover. Boom, boom, boom. Get it again. Boom, boom, boom. Get it again. Boom, boom, boom. Get it again. As many times. Then we would do random hope spots. You know, where he'd say, hope spot ended with a backbreaker, but put some miles on it. So we'd be in the middle of heat doing drop down, leapfrog, duck, duck, drop down, leapfrog, backbreaker. Mm-hmm. Like we just to work on calling basic stuff and just doing it right away. But it'd always end up in something silly. But it'd always be either a duck, a drop down, or a leapfrog. But
gotcha.
It would just switch up. All right. Duck, drop down, leapfrog, leapfrog, drop down, headlock. Like, just a bunch of that.
So it's funny because when I first came to WWF at the time, Mr. Hughes was my bodyguard. They put him with me. And he had lost a lot of weight. And he was just interesting because I hadn't really seen him a lot after that time frame, after that run. So I guess that's kind of when he started his school, maybe a few years after that.
He was the trainer. Like, he wasn't really the...
It wasn't his school?
No.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. So he was there and went and he tried another school. He bounced around a couple.
How was it? He always kind of worked, was more of a big guy.
Yeah.
You're more of a high flyer in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I just was taught, just not basic, but just like all the slams, so a big backdrop. Mm. The side slam, power slams, all that stuff. So I just learned it all just to know it, know how to do
sure.
it, know how to take it and everything. But when class would break down, he'd give us like the freedom to like go in the other ring and mess around. Mm-hmm. And I was just watching hardcore indies. Ever since I was a kid, I was watching ECW. And me and my friends would recreate RVD and Jerry Lynn.
Mm.
And we would do it like move for move the entire match, you know. So I had all these little things in the back of my head that I wanted to try, and I'd jump on the top rope, put a bunch of couch cushions down and try stuff and throw a lot of stuff at the wall, you know, pretty much. So I would just try to mix it in, you know. So I think it was cool training really old school, and I try to keep that still like to this day, because I do try to do all like the more modern moves, but still try to apply like an old school mentality, traditional wrestling. Like my wrestling school, I want like the slogan of it to be is like modern wrestling with a old, like some like old school psychology, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like traditional wrestling with a modern twist or something similar to that, you know, where I blend the two of both worlds. Like sometimes I'd watch Stone Cold matches. He was one of my favorites. Sometimes I'd watch Stone Cold matches and do like his exact match, but I would switch every one of his, you know, he didn't do that much extravagant moves, but I would switch all his moves to one of my moves, you know, or like the same attitude and stuff like that. Like just a lot of little things. It always take like two or three things to keep them down. Little small things like that. Like instead of, you know, people fight back, they get hit, they're down. Stone Cold would always take a neck breaker, get up, take a clothesline, you know.
He was such a great worker, and people kind of forget a little bit of it because he was so popular, but he was also very unorthodox. Like nobody worked like Stone Cold Steve Austin. I remember some guys sometimes be like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to work like Steve. It's like, you can use elements like you said, but no one really can work like him because he thought differently from most of the people that I've ever worked with. You know, he just had a different vibe to him, which made him so aggressive, so believable and so popular.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Were you like a gymnast at all when you were a kid?
No, but not like in a not tall
traditional way.
But no, I was always like a wild kid. You know what I mean? We would jump off rocks at the quarry and stuff, and I would just flip in my backyard. I had my grandfather like made me a ring in my backyard, but it was really just four poles cemented into the ground. Would like garden hose around it. So I've been flipping and like the kick flip thing I do off the ring post. Like I was doing that maybe when I was 13 years old. I remember just trying it, seeing it in a movie, somebody doing it in a movie and just throwing it. I don't know how it would have could have went, you know, but I just tried it one day and I nailed it. And I was like, oh, wow. And then I just started messing around. We would go to a rope swing a lot. So I'd ride the rope and I'd backflip. And I'm like, oh, okay, I could backflip. Then one day I went and I jumped going backwards, you know, momentum, and tucked. And I did a front flip. And I'm like, oh, if I go that way, I could front flip. This way, I could backflip. So then that's why I came up. I didn't come up with the dive, but that's why I figured out I could do the dive front flipping backwards.
Your trademark dive.
Yeah.
What do you call that? Does it have a name?
I call it low main rain.
Now this is when you stand on the top rope, and you do explain it to me because I've been in the ring with you a couple times. You did it, but I'm still not sure exactly how to describe it.
It's just a front flip moving backwards.
Front flip,
back, but I'm moving backwards.
Right.
So it's like the opposite of a shooting star.
Ah, gotcha.
So it's really just I'm tucking my head and hoping for the best. There's not much technique, not much skill involved whatsoever.
But you, once again, people will say, how do you practice? You don't really practice that. You just got to get up there and do it.
Yeah. But I do practice in my head what I call my difficulty 10 moves. I only got about four of them. I practice my difficulty 10 moves every once a week. And it makes my heart pounds. I gear up for it. Everything I do it before anybody gets there. But I just do it on the crash pad, you know. But I just warm up a little bit. And then I make sure I jump up and do it. Because my rings are nowhere near as good as these rings. So it's like, if I can move around and do it on this ring, then I'll be good. It's like, I don't want to go match to match without trying. If my style was different, then maybe. You know, that would be nice. But it's like, I'm going head over heels a lot, or just kicking off the pole one foot. So luckily, I have a school so that I could.
So you could do that.
Yeah.
What are your other three of the difficulty 10 moves?
I do the backwards front flip. I do the kick flip to my feet. I do the seated Spanish fly to the Invisible Man, and I just jump up to the top a lot. pretty much. So it's really just three, I guess, thinking about it now.
I like the Invisible Man. I used when I was inventing the lion salt back in 1993 when no one really did moon salts, doing it off the ropes. I used a bag of dirty laundry in Arena, Mexico to find the placement. Like, okay, if I put the dirty laundry here and I take three steps. So that when I first started, I would pick up the guy near the ropes, walk three steps out, slam him, and then I knew where I would be going. But, you know, like you said, the Invisible Man or the bag of laundry.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you're training with Mr. Hughes and you finally, you know, graduate, you learn what you need to know. What was your first match?
Well, my first match was against a guy named Johnny Cadillac.
Of course.
I was just T at the time. The match is online. It's probably hard to find, but it's Johnny Cadillac versus Tex, a kid from Texas. So
of course,
Mr. Hughes just called him Tex.
Creative.
And I was T at the time.
Also creative, right?
And we just basically both got beat up by Johnny Cadillac for about a couple minutes, and then that was it.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2007.
Wow, so you've been over 15 years on the job. So kind of what was your first big break then?
My first one would be, I mean, if call it a break, but my first stamp was like CZW. I did CZW 3 years in. That was really got the ball rolling.
And that's with, like, is that Quackenbush or is that?
No, that's... Who's it? It's DJ Hyde now.
Ah, okay.
It was Zandig.
Zandig, that's right.
Yeah.
It's kind of more of a hardcore
deathmatch
type of vibe, right?
Were
you doing those types of matches?
That's not what got me.
Of course.
But no, I ended up doing them there. Mm-hmm. But that's not when I got noticed for or anything like that.
Because CZW kind of had the same vibe as ECW, and that you had a combination of a lot of different styles.
Yeah. It was like, exactly. Yeah, same thing. And they ran out of the arena a lot, too.
Right.
That's where I debuted for them at, was in the arena. Yeah, it's just like ECW, but a little more blood.
Blood, yeah. What did you like about ECW? You said you followed it quite a bit when you were starting.
It was just that cool alternative, especially for me at that age, I guess. Like, looking back now, you know, they just pushed the limits, you know. I'd see the commercial for the pay-per-view, you know, and you see it's just looking crazy, and they're do beep, you know, it's like my parents and my family, they don't want me to get this pay-per-view, you know, that's making me want it that much more, you know, and like Rob Van Dam just acting super cool. Like Rob Van Dam, I was like in love with Rob Van Dam. Like, it's insane. Like, it's crazy. Like, I like The Rock and Stone Cold a lot, too, like a lot of kids my age. But yeah, Rob Van Dam was, like, he was just so cool to me. Mm-hmm. Just his moveset, and just, he was just so charismatic. Like, he was just so cool. Like, I wanted to be, like, the Rob Van Dam of, like, my little small town. Mm-hmm. Or, like, my high school, middle school. Like, he was just the coolest person to me.
Well, the thing with Rob, too, is like you talk about Stone Cold and The Rock. I mean, those guys are larger than life, personality-wise, and bigger guys, too, where Rob was kind of more our size and also, too, very much an original. He really was one of a kind, and no one really worked like him. Another guy was very unorthodox with his wrestling style.
Yeah, very.
So when you finish up with CCW, I mean, where else are you working at around that time?
Just probably like local indies, like in the Georgia area and stuff. But then really from CZW, I did Evolve, and that's where I spent, I would say, the majority of my independent career was working on and off with Evolve.
Where were they based out of?
I don't know where, really. They kind of just...
It's more of an East Coast promotion, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, Florida, New York, kind of random.
Who were you working with that time? Like, who were some of your favorite rivals?
Oh, at my early days of Evolve, who really had a big hand in breaking me in, Sammy Callahan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sammy Callahan, he was, me and him were the finals for the first ever Evolve title.
So you're learning from these guys. Obviously, Sammy's a vet. Like, what kind of, like, when you started out, like you mentioned, you wanted to have the foundations. That's what I was going to say about your school. You have to have the foundations.
Yeah.
You know, it's like building a house. You got to learn the basics of the business, and then you can sprinkle whatever, you know, acrobatics and high-flying, you know, antics that you want. But if you don't have those original, you know, the lockups and takedowns and all the stuff you discussed, it really doesn't work as well.
No.
So who are you learning from, though, that's kind of helping you from a psychology standpoint?
I don't want to say this because I don't want other people to think it's that much of a thing, but I'm going to say I taught myself.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I was obsessive with it, like very obsessive with it. I would say I learned a lot hands-on, like Chris Hero helped me out a lot. I've worked.
Okay. Ah, yeah.
And this isn't one match when I feel like I've learned a lot. But yeah, I feel like I taught psychology to myself by watching it and really dissecting it and not watching just anything, but trying to watch like the best guys, you know, not watching CZW and stuff, not a knock to them, but like watching main events, you know, pay-per-view matches and watching a lot of old Ring of Honor. I feel like writing AJ Styles matches in full.
Interesting.
7-8 pages, everything that's happening, I'd write AJ Styles matches out, and I feel like it taught me psychology.
Interesting. So you would watch the match and then write the whole thing down from beginning to end?
Yeah. I would call one person A and one person B. And each line, I would just be like, boom, A does this, B does that, boom. And then I would do the same match over with somebody else. So, like, it might not have been, like, the same exact move at the end, but it's like, boom, 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 and then A gets another move.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, boom, okay, then B gets another little arm drag, and B gets another little thing, and then, but A gets the big thing. One of the times I felt the dots connect trying to teach myself psychology was doing all these random standoffs, just coming up with standoffs. They'd get, reactions. Okay. Then I wrote down an AJ Styles standoff, and it was like, A tries a drag, B tries a drag, A does a sweep, B does a sweep, A does this, B does that, and then they stand up.
And he face-to-face.
I was like, oh, they're literally going tit for tat. One does one, other one tries one, one does this. It's exactly perfectly even, and then they stand up. Nobody took any damage and stuff. So then I tried it, and it was the one time they all... And I was like, oh, okay.
It's amazing, like you said, when that light clicks on you. You know, I remember exactly where we were in Chile. Shawn Michaels and I, when we first started working all the time, I think 2008 maybe. And we had a double down. And he was like, don't move until I tell you. And I just sat there and people cheered and then they went down. And I'm like, we got to don't move. We got to do something. Don't move. And then it starts... And they start to build, and suddenly everyone's going crazy and we haven't done anything. And it's like you said, just that light clicking of we don't do anything, people will now know, okay, now we can start to chant and cheer and yell. Kind of like what you learned. If you do the tit for tat, and then do the standoff, there's a reason why there's a standoff, because I tried to beat you, you tried to beat me, I tried to do this, you tried to do that. It's a, you know, you're coming to a loggerhead.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's kind of a cool moment to, oh, okay, now I've got that little feather in my cap.
Yeah.
You know? I find it interesting that you wrote it down, though. Who else did you do that with? Was it just AJ, or did you write it down with other guys, too?
I wrote down countless people's everything. When I tell you I'm obsessed with it, I don't mean it in slang. I felt like I was cheating on wrestling if I watched anything else for a good 5-year period or more of my life. This might sound weird, but I would feel guilty. So like on some of the first times or like first dates or anything, I'm hanging out with my wife, we'd have a movie or something on the living room TV and I'd have a laptop on the floor with wrestling on.
So you're not cheating on wrestling?
I had that. I got it tatted on me, on my wedding finger, underneath my wedding ring. It's just the word wrestling.
Oh, really? You got your wedding ring on underneath the word wrestling. So that's how obsessed you are. Yeah. Now, so you're a literal student of the game.
Yeah. So I would do it with tag matches too, you know. I did a lot of FTR matches when it came to that. So, you know, I can't think of that many other singles people I would do. I would do try to do with Stone Cold sometimes here and there, you know. Try to recreate some of his matches, but when it came down to tags, I would do a lot of FTR. A lot of Usos stuff if it was tag.
It's interesting. When I first got to WWF, wasn't really doing much. I hadn't found my stride yet. I would take a notebook, and if I wasn't on the show, I would go watch the show from the monitor and take notes on everything, mm-hmm. and then go back and read those notes. What did I see that interested me? What did I see that didn't make sense? What did I see that really worked? Just trying to do anything to switch my mindset a bit. So I've never heard anybody that did that sort of thing of actually writing down the match from beginning to end. Because I think it's like studying. If you're trying to study some English thing or whatever, if you write it down, it always makes it stay in your head more. You can actually pay attention to every word.
Yeah.
So when I know that you did also some time overseas, a lot of time in Japan. Was that always a goal for you to go over there?
Once I got into wrestling, I was young, so I didn't know about anything. I just knew
WWF, yeah, right.
WCW, ECW. But once I started wrestling and I found out everything, I wanted to go to Japan just to get that under my belt, sure. You know. And I remember hearing how quiet the crowds would be and how you could, like, in the beginning it'd be like ding, and then you could kind of hear their footsteps in the ring. And I remember my first time in Japan and hearing my footsteps in the ring. So that was the main thing I wanted to get out of Japan.
You know what's funny is I never ever would have described that, but as soon as you said, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what you almost hear, the squeaking of the boots. Know, yeah. I remember my first, because I've been going there since I was 20 years old. And I remember, like, I knew, but when you get there, it's like, there's nobody making any noise. Yeah. Do I suck? And then you just do, like, a tackle, drop down, leapfrog, arm drag, and it's a standing ovation.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and then I started realizing they're not being silent because they don't like it. They're being silent because they're watching intently everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole different way of doing things there. Mm-hmm. What company did you work for?
Dragon Gate.
Ah, so tell me some of the guys that you work with and what it was like there.
Well, the main person I was working with, and this is a little story I wanted to kind of say anyway.
Sure.
I was working with Shima a lot. And he's like their guy.
Yeah.
He's like.
Yeah, he used to work in WCW, spelt CIMA.
Yes.
Shima.
So he's like up there. So, like, he, like, took me under his wing, and, like, we were teaming up, and we had tag belts and everything. And, yeah, he was the guy I was working with the most. I worked with Shingo, Yamato.
Shingo's great.
I worked with the entire roster. I did 2 3-month tours.
3 months?
Yeah, whatever. However, the longest stay you could do is what I did.
So before we get into that, so tell me, like, what could you learn from Shima and from Shingo? Obviously, they speak English, but it's more than that. It's there's a whole Japanese way of doing things.
Yeah. Well, one thing I kind of learned from Shima, it's just taking time. It's hard to explain it, but just to, like, hold his ground. And, like, he would, like, hit somebody with something and then, like, maybe just, like, stand there and fix his elbow pad. And, like, it would just look so cool. But he was just, sometimes he'd fix his waistband in between doing something, but it would just look cool. And then I asked him if I could. He claps with every strike he does. So when I was in Japan, I asked him if I could do that alongside him. Oh, he's like, he's sitting there thinking about it. And he was like, okay, okay. So then I was like, oh, cool. And he was like the coolest guy to me. So I clapped with all my strikes to be like Shima, like pay homage or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's why I clap on my strikes. I'm not doing it for sound.
It's a homage.
Get that out there. I just want to get that out there. It's not really for the sound. I'm trying to be like one of my, my OGs.
Influences, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you worked in when you were there in Japan for 3 months, like, where did you live? And kind of tell me the experience that you had of being over there for that long of a time.
I lived in the dojo.
Wow.
And it was cool because I like working. I don't care about getting up and doing all that. But the second time I was there, it didn't work out well for me. I hated it. It's cool, and I don't want to deter nobody who has, like, wants to go. But, like, it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to get these things under my belt.
Right.
And come back.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Pretty much, it's all I wanted.
You wanted
to
the
do.
Experience.
When I was there, one of the tours, I was with Gargano, and that was the only other person that could speak English. And one of the tours was with Rich Swann. So I could only talk to one person this whole time. And then, like, you can't use the phone. You know, now it might be easier, but if you turn my dad on, it was like I'm getting creamed. Mm-hmm. So, like, I couldn't have no contact with my family. It just got rough. And I didn't make it through the second one. I asked to leave.
Oh, wow.
I've never said this to anybody or, like, put it out there like that. People just know I went to Japan or whatever. Like, I never really, you know, but. Everything's falling into place now for me. Like, my career's going well, so it's like...
You can say it.
Yeah, I can say it now. But yeah, the second time in Japan, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. It was...
Well, three months is a long time, yes. Dude. I mean, that's 12 weeks. So I'm thinking my longest tour was I did 3 weeks, had a week off, and did like a week. So I did 5 weeks. And that's a long time. And my dream at the time was to be in Japan. So I wasn't complaining, but I remember thinking... This is long, and you did 2.5 times that.
Yeah, I could be stretching it, but... It
sounds about right, though. For a smaller company, they're going to bring you over and just have you stay.
Yeah. It was rough. It was challenging. Just not the workout, not the training, not the travel, none of that, but everything else. When we weren't doing stuff, it sucked.
So before we talk about what you did after Japan, so tell me, where'd you get the name AR Fox?
Just listening to this rapper, AR Ab. Over and over again, and just the way he was his signature saying when he would when he's about to rap, he'd be like, yeah, it's AR, and it just sounded so hard to me. Like, I'd always work out to it, and hear him come out, he's like this Philly growling gangster rapper. Yeah. So I was like, I'm definitely growing up, my kid name was TJ. Mm-hmm. So kind of like the initials,
right?
But I wanted to switch them, so I switched them to AR, and then just added Fox. It just felt like I gotta kind of move like a fox, or like I'm not gonna be this jack. I just felt like Fox fitted me, not strong, not you know what I mean, not
sly jacked. Like a fox.
Yeah, you know. So I just put that together.
But you said what was your original name?
My original name was the Amplifier. So it was like the Amplifier, High Flyer. So like everything I did, I added extra jump on. So even if I was going to clothesline you, I'd jump unnecessarily high just to come back down and hit you with a clothesline.
Well, you were the Amplifier,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You had to live up to your gimmick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we talked about the time that you spent in Japan and whether... when you finish there, is there more of a buzz about you now? Is the word getting around?
Yeah, once I had my my time of I don't know if it was right after that, but probably shortly after I did Japan, I started becoming the main guy on the indies. After I did Japan, then it was just off to do everything. I had won titles over there, so as soon as I came back here, a lot of people were putting the titles on me. I won the Evolve title. Maybe within 3 months of going to Japan, I went to Mexico.
What'd you think of it? What'd you like there?
Oh, it was cool. I liked it. It was different. All these things are so different, just a experience.
See, it's smart, though, because, once again, that's kind of how I – that's not kind of – that's how I did it with my career, in that, obviously, if someone would have called me from WWE, I would have went in a second, but no one did, so – I was doing really good in Japan, doing really good in Mexico, and that gave me a lot of different experiences, not just for wrestling styles and wrestling ideas, but for life experiences too. You can really figure out a lot of things when you've lived around the world, and you can deal with a lot more too, not just in the business, but out of the business as well.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So tell us about your time in Mexico.
Mexico was cool. You know, I'd go out every night just to see what was going on.
Mexico City or where?
Yeah, we're Mexico City. I was there for maybe 2 weeks or something like that with Willie Mack.
Oh, nice. Yeah. What company were you with? Was it CMLL?
No, we were with an indie promotion out there called DTU. Yeah, it's like the CZW of Mexico.
where do they put you up?
We're at random hotels here and there.
Were they nice ones?
They were all right. They all just kept telling us not to go outside.
Yeah.
But I went out exploring every night just to see what it was like. And
did you ever have any dangerous experiences?
No, but I've been sketched out, goosebumps, hair standing up, walking down some alleys where I'm so far down it that I'm all right, might be
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's even better to turn back around and barely any light, but I could see a huge rat run across, you know.
Yep. And, sounds about right.
Pile of trash, taller than me.
Who were you working with there? Do you recall?
No.
If it's indie groups, it's probably just lower level guys, right?
No, one of the guys is he's making a name for himself now. Hamburguesa.
Mm. Which is, of course, hamburger in Spanish.
Yeah, he was like Kid Hamburger.
Well, Cheeseburger's going to be pissed. Cheeseburger versus Hamburguesa in a grudge match. Did he have a hamburger gimmick?
Yeah, no, he was like obese.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. That was, so he was. So that's. So you got the obese cheeseburger and you got the skinny cheeseburger. So I know you worked, speaking of Mexico and Lucha, I know you worked with Lucha Underground, which for a time I really, really dug Lucha Underground. I thought the idea of it was great and the whole concept of it was great. What was your experience like there?
Oh, it was awesome. Oh, it was sick. It was cool. Still don't compare to being at AEW, but it was a nice
It was close. So what was your character? And you're getting, tell me kind of what the whole vibe of that place was.
It was super chill.
They were filming kind of, they would tell like stories and there'd be monsters and.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was able to do some acting. They had like real live acting coaches and stuff. I got one scene, I'm kidnapped and I'm like held hostage by like some foreigners and stuff getting punched. And like, it was cool stuff. I had a whole army suit to put on during one. They had the freaking clacker things, you know.
Like take two, clack.
Yeah. They had people like sitting in my spot until they were ready to have me do it and stuff. Mm. So it was different like that. But it was still like an indie show at the same time.
Were you AR Fox there?
No, they didn't. They said they wanted me to change my name, so I was Dante Fox.
Dante Fox.
They gave me a list of names, and one of the first names was Shadow. So I was like, oh, I'll do Shadow Fox. And then I debuted, and they just called me Dante Fox, and I was like, oh, all right.
But they would tape, like three or four shows at once, right?
Yeah, usually two. They would do like four on the weekend or so. So like, I remember one time I had a death match, and then the next day I had a 6-man tag. But like on TV, it was airing weeks apart. But like I got all these fresh cuts on me.
Yeah. Well, and there was also like kind of a little bit of an issue I know with the contracts that you had to sign that kind of held you for like 10 years or that sort of thing. Did you get stuck with that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, obviously it didn't bother you then. Cause some of those guys were like, they couldn't go anywhere for like 10 years. They had to get lawyers to get them out and all that sort of thing.
No, luckily I didn't have no issue with none of that.
Gotcha. So, was that kind of the last stop prior to AEW? Did you ever have any flirtings with WWE at all?
No, I thought I was going to work with them, like, I don't know how, but I had got, like, 6-7 people hired there. Like
from your school?
Yes. Let's say, I don't know what year this would be, but maybe let's say, like, at the beginning of, like, AW, you know, like 3 or 4 years ago.
Which people did you get hired there?
Austin Theory is my main one.
Gotcha.
You know?
Well, Austin, obviously, is a good name to be using for sure.
Yeah. And then like other people I trained that are like here, I'm just gonna remember everyone overall. It's like I trained Alan Angels.
Okay.
Danny J, Lee Johnson.
Oh, so the whole Atlanta contingent.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever work at all with Southern Honor Wrestling?
No, I have not yet. No. all my students do.
That building that they use, the Action Center in Canton, that's where Fozzy rehearses.
Oh yeah.
That's our rehearsal place.
Oh.
I'm there every couple months, it seems, out in Canton.
Oh, wow.
So all of those Atlanta people were getting signed, which is hilarious because, once again, you're like the guy who's training them going, hello, I'm right here.
Yeah, and then like Evolve was like doing some, they were like starting to work with WWE. So then they had all these guys from NXT come, and then they kept having them work with me. like this guy Mansoor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Street Profits. Like I had maybe 3 or 4 tag matches, and then they're just like, hey, just do your thing, just go crazy, like just run a bunch of spots, like get this is awesome chance and stuff. And I'm like, oh, all right. So I'm like, oh shoot, maybe I could like get a hand in, like, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. working there. So like that's what I thought it was gonna be, and that's like the closest I came. I did a tryout for FCW when I was super new, mm-hmm. and for FCW,
right, which is back when they were still in Tampa.
Yeah.
That was the extent of it.
Yeah, I just went down, and now I think that was the one they hired Tyler Breeze, and I'm still not sure if it's like a work or not.
What, did they hired him?
The tryout.
Oh, well, tell me why you say that.
No, I don't know if like they already knew they were going to sign him or not.
Oh, I
gotcha.
You
know what I mean? And yeah, like, yeah. You know,
but yeah, because those tryouts are more of just like, especially now, they're more just like drills and the kind of just trying to punish you rather than actually seeing what you can do, right?
Vicious. Because I was young, like 19, I was dying.
What did they have you do?
This pin drill. Take a leg.
Sweep the leg?
Yep. Leg sweep, snapmare. Leg sweep cover, snapmare cover, hit the rope tackle cover. And then you go through the whole line. So you're the guy taking all the bumps and kicking out. Boom, you take the last tackle, kick out. The other person will be right behind you. You take the leg sweep. So it's like
that's the drill over and over and over again.
Bump and kick out, bump and kick out.
Were you disappointed that you never got a more of a chance with them?
I mean, then, yeah, because I really thought I was like up there. You know, I thought I was going to, I was pretty heartbroken, you know,
sure,
kind of
right.
Like. I don't know how I felt because I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Tony Nese was also in it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember not really knowing him. I know him now, but not really knowing him. And I'm like, dang, if I don't get it, that guy's going to get it, man. Crap. And then Tyler Breeze got it. So I was like, I didn't know how to feel.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of almost confused, you know, because I didn't know how wrestling worked. You're still kind of green. You think you're so good. Why'd that guy get it? He's this, that, you know. So, like, I was like, if I didn't get it, that Tony Nese didn't get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, how'd he get it? Like, we did, like, we had more cardio than him. Like, how'd he get the job? You know,
right,
like,
right.
I was, like, kind of lost. Like, I didn't know.
So what do you think the answer was then? Personality thing, maybe?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. Like, the best, for some reason, I always felt like wrestling was like a person, and I have this commitment to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, I felt almost in a weird way like wrestling had betrayed me. Like, because I was like, I know they're not trying harder than me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. That I was more lost, confused, like, oh man, how could that happen? Like, I don't know. I just thought it was definitely gonna work, and then it didn't. So,
how did you get over that feeling that wrestling had betrayed you?
Well, I knew it was just some like almost like a small bitter feeling, you know. I just for one, I don't know what else I'm gonna do. Every time I'm like, oh, what could I do then if this ain't going to work out after doing it for so long? I have no idea where I would start over at my age. So that was something that kept me going and not worried about being bitter or anything, because I don't know what else would
keep
me occupied, you know, or it would just be just doing something to do it, you know. And then I also, you know, really matured, and I understood that wrestling doesn't owe me anything, you know, and I remember like really like understanding that, you know, this is probably like 4 or 5 years into my career.
Something that Regal always said, like, the job doesn't owe you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And once you figure that out, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, but you also said too, I was the same. I have no backup plan. There's nothing else I'm doing.
Yeah.
So in fact, that's one of the reasons why it was years into, but when I got a hand tattoo, I'm like, now I like at the time, especially, I know I can't go work at a bank because hand tattoos are like really forbidden, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, this is what we do, and you just got to make it make it work.
Yeah.
You know? Let's talk about, as we start to wind down here, about your experiences here in AEW. You mentioned that you find out that you're booked on TV. Did you know Top Flight at all? Did you have any previous experiences with them? Or
no, didn't know them one bit.
So, but it's a good mix, though. You guys kind of a good chemistry, right?
Yeah. We're cool. Yeah, they're super nice. I met them like one time on the indies, but by the time I seen them again, I wasn't sure if I even met them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was that long ago. But I knew my opponents well. It was just nuts.
Who was the opponents again?
Death Triangle.
Right.
Yeah, Pac and...
So how did that first match go? Because obviously you're probably a little bit nervous knowing... Like, were you signed yet at that point?
No, I wasn't signed.
Okay, so here's your chance.
Yeah. I was pretty nervous the whole time, but not until like the day of a show. It's weird, but I'm not nervous. I'm nervous hardcore like 2 days before, a day before. But like I was saying, I'm writing everything down, so I feel like it's off my chest. So when it came time for it, it was crazy. But it happened to be, I debuted on TV. It was like 10 minutes away from my hometown. And it just it was in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. I've had a lot of wild experiences here already. Not wild, but I've had a lot of epic experiences happen. Cheering the ring with you is one of them for sure. Without being here, you know, I don't have to say that, but
thanks, dude. Yeah.
That was epic. I got our picture printed out of us.
Nice.
About to square off.
That's cool. It's great because we were getting ready to challenge for the 6-man titles. We were in Sacramento, I remember, and it was me and Danny and Sammy against you and Dante and Darius. Yeah. And I remember we were going over the match because I knew of you at this point, and it was like I've enjoyed both the matches that we had.
Yeah.
Like both of them are really, really good.
Yeah.
And it was fun, kind of once again being in there with you, with your style, some of the athletic stuff, acrobatic, incredible. But once, like we said earlier, the foundation was there too, which was really cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. This whole experience has been crazy. Every single match of them's been nuts.
So when did you finally get signed?
Oh, they offered me the contract after that match.
After the Death Triangle?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. How did that feel for you after all these years of being all over the world and now you get your first national contract?
It was nuts. It was crazy. I couldn't really say anything. Clips out. I just kind of am covering my face. I didn't know how to react.
How did you find out? Who called you? Was it live? Was it over the phone?
They did a what you call it. They did like they're going to do a... after the match.
No promo. Kidding. Oh, wow. Okay. So tell me this.
A whole setup thing for me. Then Lexi goes, oh, and we just got word that Tony Khan is offering you a contract. What do you say? And I just was like, I might not have said anything. It just took me completely off guard. Like, we just had got done with the match. I never did not. I was trending on Twitter after that match. Like, it was crazy.
So are you calling your family afterwards and saying you're not going to believe this or like?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I'm calling them, showing them all this stuff. I'm checking my email the next morning because they're telling me it's going to come in the next morning, or they're telling me it's on the way or something like that. But they sent it so quick that I had missed it, and I kept checking above, and I remember, and so it was there. So then I remember seeing it in like the middle of the night because I just couldn't sleep, and I remember it was nuts. It was nuts. I remember the whole. I don't remember much anymore. I don't remember much, but I remember being so on the fence about questions. Like, because I was like, man, I just want to sign this thing. Like, I don't got no time to ask questions. But I was so worried about little things about my school, you know. So I was like, I just remember being so nervous about asking any kind of questions.
Didn't want to mess it up.
Yeah, but my mom was like, you're signing a contract for a while. Like, of course you're going to have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And they were cool. You still can run your school and...
Yeah. Don't interfere. Don't do nothing. I was just paranoid. Like,
well, it's the wrestling business.
It's so long. I'm like, there's no way this could go right. Pretty much, you know.
You know, and then, of course, leading back to what we started with in the conversation, you're getting kind of you know, you're getting spots here and there, working matches here and there. And then suddenly you get this, you know, this big heel turn. And it's interesting because when we did the match, it was you and Darius in Action Andretti the second time with the Suzuki Gods. And Tony and I were talking about the finish. And he said, well, take it on Darius because we're going to turn AR heel and we want to keep him kind of in a different way. So I'd heard about it back then at that point. Wow. When did you hear that day? Or
No. I think I heard about it a couple of weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I heard about it a couple of weeks before, and it was, everything was happening how it was gonna happen and stuff. So I was, you know, kind of impressed because I love to know a little bit of what's happening
sure.
sooner than later. So like that was really good. But yeah, I had known about it.
That's great.
Just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now once again with the Mogul Embassy, it's kind of the biggest spotlight you've been in. What do you kind of want to accomplish now with this new attitude of AR Fox?
I want to accomplish mainly me is like, I haven't really been heel. I haven't been on a big stage till now, but I haven't. So I want to show the boys basically that I could do just as good
mm-hmm.
as a heel.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I do all the spots and those get over and all that stuff. But I want to, do put the same amount of thought into a subtle cutoff type, you know what I'm saying? Never just, I want to earn all the respect I did for the risks and being a high flyer cool. I want to like try to show that I'm just as good at being a heel with it too, you know?
Well, it's important, you know what I mean? You got to be able to play both sides, and that's just going to give you more longevity and make you a bigger star.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because, you know, one of the things you're known for, these spectacular moves. So now you kind of have to figure out how you incorporate those.
Yeah.
But still in a heat getting way rather than a look at me way.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, that's what I'm excited about. And it makes it a little bit easier for me in a way of, well, I just did this past 6 months as babyface. So now starting as heel is like a clean slate. Mm-hmm. So it's all, I'm going to do all the same stuff. I'm just going to remix it and get to them crappy ways.
Yeah.
You know, hit smart. You with the cool move, but yeah, I'll probably get into it crappy. You know what I mean? So I'm excited to do that. Yeah, I'm excited to you know, swerve people, you know, because I get the chance to do that more as a heel. You know, I always tell my students once they wrestle more than a couple, you know, once they wrestle in a while, all right, now have a match where, like, I always want somebody to be like, oh, yeah, this is the shine. Okay, yeah. Oh, watch this part. Oh, that's the cutoff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, now he's going to. And then I want them to be wrong almost every time. And I get to do that more as a heel because you're in more control of the match.
Right, of course. Yeah.
You know, so.
You got to be more of a ring general in that case.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it.
What, last question for you. What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
Probably my death match with Killshot with my partner now, Strickland.
Oh, that's right. Swerve was Killshot.
Yeah.
So now your guys are partners. See how it all comes together.
Yeah.
And that was in Lucha Underground, right?
Yeah. So that's probably my favorite match, and I can't really compare. But regular, but not a hardcore match, probably something with the Bucks and PWG or something.
Oh, wow, you worked there quite a bit too.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Or maybe my matches with Theory, you know, they're a lot of fun.
Many more great matches to come.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it's been awesome talking to you and getting to know you, man. Yeah, congratulations.
Sure. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Can't wait to work you as a heel.
Yeah.
Tell me, call some spots for me, brother.